Support for the BTPM NPR What's Next podcast comes from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, partnering with the community to pursue racial and socioeconomic health equity. Learn more at hfwcny.org.
From Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, this is What's Next, an hour dedicated to amplifying the voices of marginalized and underrepresented communities across Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We cannot erase, we cannot reform, we cannot make things better if we're uncomfortable having tough conversations,
absolutely,
if we're uncomfortable
absolutely
talking about race.
What's Next carries forward our mission to engage in meaningful conversations about race, equity, and the shared concerns that deeply affect Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
Don't stop. Make those families part of your life. Their lives are part of yours. Don't stop.
Together, we dive into the real issues, striving for understanding, connection, and change.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
And welcome to What's Next here on BTPM NPR. I'm your host for this episode, Ryan Zunner, and we're here talking about UB's Indigenous Studies program and their upcoming Storytellers Conference, happening Friday, April 10th at the Niagara Falls Convention Center from 8:30 a.m. to 8 p.m. The theme this year, Life, Breath, Justice for Our Future. I'm excited to be joined by two very special guests who have a big hand in this year's Storytellers Conference. Mashana Goman, chair of UB's Indigenous Studies Department, a Tonawanda Seneca patrilineal descendant, and also Aaron Vinavery, Six Nations Cayuga, who's the Community Outreach and Cultural Programming Coordinator for the department there at UB. Thanks, both of you, for joining us today.
Nyawe, it's nice to be here.
Of course. Yeah,
thanks for having us.
Of course. Yeah, it's going to be a really exciting conversation. This is something that's been going on now. This is the 16th one. And for somebody who's hearing about this kind of conference for the first time, Mashana, what is the UB Indigenous Storytellers Conference?
Well, first, it's the 16th one, but Indigenous Studies has a long 50-year history. So there's a little hiatus in the Storytellers Conference. It originated actually as a graduate initiative and a way to bring community and scholars together and have that intersection between academia and community events. And it's very much kept that kind of vibe to it. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful way to bring younger, it's intergenerational, it brings younger scholars, community members, deep knowledge holders together into the same space to share and think about what are the issues that are concerning us most at the moment. And so a lot of the panels and panelists come together in ways that you don't often see in academic conferences or just in something that's mostly a community conference. So you have this like very much an amalgamation of all these different sectors of scholars, communities, community scholars. It's a really wonderful way to learn about each other. Mm-hmm. And often people think of storytellers, they think it's just like stories, right? But the story research telling is a story. And so part of it's research, part of it's storytelling. So you have different kind of aspects that carry on within storytellers too. Really, it's the stories that make us, right? So what are the stories that we can learn from each other through research, through presentation, feedback of data? A lot of people use storytellers to kind of get feedback on different initiatives. And we have wonderful orgs presenting. We have a great lineup of vendors as well. I'll let Aaron speak to that.
Yeah.
Also. And it's just a way for people to come together and share knowledge.
Right, right. And Aaron, I'm sure, you know, throughout your years going to universities and studying programs, you know, what makes this different from your typical academic conference?
Well, I came into the Storytellers Conference as a grad student. It was like in the third iteration of it, and we had maybe 20 people in a room, and it has grown so much over the years. And now our last year we had over 320 registrants for our conference.
Big growth.
So that it's great to see the growth it had. but it's also great to kind of see all the different people that keep on coming back. And I'm constantly getting people just coming up to me and commending us on all the work that we're doing with the conference. Mm-hmm. And people saying that's their favorite conference of the year, just because of all the people that they get to meet, just like interacting with academics, interacting with community members, interacting with family members that they haven't seen in a while. Right. And it's really great to bring all those people together and hear the laughs, the stories that they exchange, and just being able to help curate those kind of chats is really very heartwarming for me to be able to do that. And it's great to kind of grow those connections throughout our Haudenosaunee communities, because mm-hmm. We're all doing great work in all these different sectors of where we're working.
Right, different geographic areas, different nations, things like that.
It's very cross-border.
Yes, yeah, all across Turtle Island, really. Indigenous Studies Department, right at UB, research symposium, events like that. Why storytelling for this? Why is that the centerpiece, Mishana?
Because stories are what make us, mm-hmm. right? The stories have a material reality to them. Mm-hmm. Like I always tell my students, in many ways, the U.S. is a story of itself. Federal Indian law is just one part of that story. And to take stories seriously is to take not only the past, present, and future seriously, but also to see us written within the fabric of our communities and where we are at today. So it's a really wonderful place to hear different varieties of stories, because I think sometimes we might hear one story of Indigenous peoples, but there's so many breadth of stories and resiliency and resurgence that goes into that. What I love about storytellers is that it's plural, it's in the teller, so there's not just one authoritative voice that people are hearing, but you get to hear all the different ways that community comes together and is made up in our histories. And people have very serious discussions at storytellers where it becomes a place where people can speak to things such as the Olka crisis and what it means 20 years later. That was last year. We had a lot about talking about that. What are women's roles in community? That's another serious conversation that has happened recently. And the environmental issues, how do we organize? How do we come together? Storytelling becomes a way of working out what matters and prioritizing what matters too, by hearing all the different aspects around one story. And this year's concentration on language or life breath or language breath. I'm not a language speaker myself, but in talking to the wonderful language teachers that we have across Haudenosaunee territory, mm-hmm. you can learn so much by that. So while we have a focus, we talk about different areas, right? But this year's focus on life breath largely stems from the importance that we understand language to be and the different nuances that it can tell. And the different stories even one word can hold. And I learn a lot through our language instructors, like Damian Webster, who's also the director of Tonawanda Language, David Shango, who's the TIPO officer at Seneca Nation. He really goes deep into the philosophical aspects of language that each carry a story. Marilyn Schindler, who used to be our language teacher until she retired recently. And we just have all these wonderful language instructors that we can learn so much from. Mia McKee does these wonderful, she's one of our faculty at UB Tuscarora, and she teaches our Tuscarora language classes. Even on Valentine's Day, she did this whole little project, wonderful project around language and I love you, and the different ways it's said and the making and the doing of language. So I think those are stories that we're telling here. We're going to have just go in depth with that kind of language speaking and life breath and why that's important. So stories matter, because even hearing the stories of one word, right? Mm-hmm. It holds deep, deep knowledge that goes for centuries since time immemorial. So I think those stories are really the things that we hold with us, are also the things that we are prioritized in our stories, right? Mm-hmm. As we tell them, and those are the stories are the things that we pass down to the next generation.
Yeah, I know language very important to you, Aaron, in your academic research. How vital is that in a university setting, right? In an academic setting to have language be such a priority, especially when you're talking about Indigenous studies?
I think it's vital to be able to use our languages in academics, and be able to share that and be able to bring a lot of that knowledge into the classroom. To be able to use it is very powerful. All of our histories of getting our language taken away is, I think, one of the reasons why it's so important to kind of reestablish our languages in the classroom being used. A lot of us are struggling to reconnect with those that language that has been lost, and giving that language that power once again is a great way of saying that we're still here. Mm-hmm. That we're still living, we're still struggling to survive, but we're still here, and we're pushing on. You tried to take our language from us, but we're hanging on to it still. We're being able to use it in our research. We're able to use it in conversations with our colleagues. We have non-Indigenous people using our language. And I think one of the big things for me recently, we had a movie showing where they had Cayuga language spoken in the movie. That was something that I never thought I would ever get to see in my lifetime. But to be able to see that on the screen, people using the Cayuga language and it having subtitles, and it was just a very a big moment for me to just be able to hear that.
Right. It's breaking a barrier in a medium that you don't traditionally see an Indigenous language in. And this Storytellers Conference, I mean, seems a lot of that, right? Introducing a lot of those aspects into Western academic frameworks in a way, bringing that language and oral tradition into that. I mean, has that been difficult? I mean,
I see the Western academic framework, sometimes they're tools that can be useful, like soil testing. That's useful to our communities. And we have Alyssa Warrior, who couldn't be here today. She's one of our students. She uses soil testing, which is, you know, could be seen like science. So sometimes I think of, yes, it's bringing it together. But really for kind of Indigenous methodologies, which is a class I teach, it's not one or the other or an authority of one or the other, but it takes both, right? What would have happened if we were allowed to develop, right? We could have reached to the same soil testing components, right? We had science, which scientists are now just realizing our science was actually accurate about things being interconnected, ecosystems and those kind of things. There was indigenous science long on this continent, long before there were Western scientists, right? So I think sometimes the stories also that are told are also hold some of those sciences as well. And so I think bringing them together is really just enriching everybody's life. We can think about various environmental issues. I always think of Leslie Marmon Silko's ceremony, not to get too academic here, but they always had in Laguna Pueblo, they always had stories about the uranium and the yellow, right? And that you're not supposed to touch it or it was poison. That turns out to be true, right? And with high rates of cancer, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that communities have always had these kind of stories and sciences that were involved. So bringing it together is really just a way to enrich both academia and our communities, and to be able to think about the ways that our youth particularly are using scientific tools that they're learning in university to be able to make our communities stronger and better. And again, Alyssa Warrior and the work she's doing with the toxins at Cattaraugus Creek is just wonderful. Agnes William has been a previous speaker, and she works a lot on West Valley and the nuclear waste that is there and the deterioration of that. And using science becomes an important element to address that, but also to bring in indigenous perspectives who are stewards over those lands. So I see it as coming together, mm-hmm. and it's not necessarily bringing Native stories into academia so much as coming and merging together in order to support and strengthen both. Mm-hmm. That's how I see it more.
Yeah, you're listening to What's Next here. We're talking about the Indigenous Storytellers Conference upcoming on April 10th at the Niagara Falls Convention Center. Mashana Goman here with us, Aaron Vinavery, both of the Indigenous Studies Department. Aaron, talk a little bit about, the diversity here that you might see in this kind of audience. You touched on it a little bit earlier with talking about, non-Indigenous folks using Indigenous language sort of in some of their research. Talk about the diverse amount of people that this brings, this conference, to these Indigenous stories told by folks, Indigenous folks from a wide background, right? You don't just have research professors, right? You have people like John Kane, right? A longtime Mohawk activist talking about Indigenous mascots. What kind of audience does this bring to these kinds of issues?
I think it brings a lot wider audience for our conference, and we have a number of people from tons of different backgrounds. There's people that are working on their language programs, and they're interested in learning about different aspects of creating a language program that's going to sustain a language. And other people have different ways to approach language that maybe that they haven't used before, and kind of being able to share those kind of ideas across academic and community people and elders, and kind of this, it just becomes this shared space for these ideas to kind of bounce off each other. And I think that's one of the things that we're looking to do is bring all these people together and share the things that we're doing. And so it's easier for us to kind of find that thing that we need in order to keep our our pursuits going. Sometimes we hit those walls and we don't know where to turn next, but somebody else may be doing something similar and in a different area that they've never really considered before. And it kind of like turns that light on for them and they're able to make those connections. And it's wonderful to see those connections being made. It's constant. I see those connections being made, and it's always wonderful to hear that. Thanks for having this conference, because I was able to meet up with this other person that's doing very similar work to me, and it really influenced how I was thinking about my own work, and then have people that are non-academics or that are presenting for the first time, and to have a kind of outlet for them to share their work. They may not be in academic circles, but they're doing a lot of the work that academics should be kind of doing. Mm. So to kind of bring those people together is, I think, very important and informative. And just to be able to not only have that, but also have a lot of our elders be a participant in these conversations. They hold a lot of knowledge. They hold a lot of experiences, and they're able to bring a different viewpoint, make us see what we should be always kind of thinking about. And not only just community elders, we have a lot of our Haudenosaunee chiefs, clan mothers that come here to kind of talk about some of the issues that they're dealing with on the Confederacy level. And it's good to have that interaction, so not everybody's getting stuck in only one lane and not able to see like the bigger picture. And this is about kind of bringing the bigger picture into view for a lot of these people that are kind of siloed out into the places that they're working, and they don't have interactions with a ton of Indigenous people. And to be able to kind of create that space for Indigenous people to see across multi disciplines is kind of amazing.
Yeah, it seems like there's that element of the seventh generation principle in it almost.
And it's also to hash out certain things that we don't really know about yet. Like, is AI good for teaching language or not? We don't know. Right? And it's a good way to kind of think through those ideas and back and forth. Like, what's the role of technology and languages? Like, what are the roles that we have? So I think it becomes a space for really hashing those things out in a genuine, interesting way from all different perspectives. Like that's you know what one of the things that we're thinking about in relation to that, right?
Yeah, and it's also a very family friendly event.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we have a number of children that are running the halls and sitting in some of these presentations, and it's great to see that they're kind of continuing on that kind of bringing your kids to these things, even if they're not fully paying attention, they're still getting some of that information.
Yeah.
And that's vital for, you know, advancing, you know, Indigenous storytelling, Indigenous knowledge. That factor has to play a huge role in when you plan things like this.
In Indigenous education, I think it kind of breaks down that idea that you're choosing either education or your community, like, right? How bringing together both is really what we want to do at University at Buffalo and Aaron Spinzel. A lot of time doing community outreach. And so I think we always want to have that kind of environment within our Indigenous Studies department, right? Bringing intergenerational communities together.
Yeah. And is that, I mean, what are some of the biggest, you know, I guess barriers in doing that?
Sometimes it's just parking at UB.
I think almost everyone in Buffalo can relate to that.
That's the first thing that popped to my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, is it, do you guys find it difficult? I mean, putting together things like this? I mean, it's very beneficial, obviously, from a personal standpoint and for what the department's trying to do. You know, I guess, how do you make sure that this is a good event and build on the future? How does it evolve?
I think it's, we build on it by just continuing opening up that space for people that have never presented before, mm-hmm. People that are don't feel like they're an academic person, but still have the kind of that history and knowledge of some of our cultural history, but also kind of bringing in some of those traditional storytellers that are telling some of those stories.
I would also say it's a different scale of events, right? Mm. Sometimes we just have sessions where we just get together with the community members and there's no set agenda that people are just coming together over food. For instance, like we host a barbecue for all our research participants and our students. So the students get to meet the different groups that we're working with. And I think those kind of coming togethers that we have over food and over cultural workshop, material workshops that I'll let Aaron speak to a little bit, like bringing community members in for our beading nights. Alyssa Warrior again hosts the beading nights, but there's a Cattaraugus bead workers come in to do that. So I think that these kind of elements where you're kind of satisfying both the academic and also the cultural, where there's not the split, because sometimes over making moccasins, for instance, I had a really wonderful conversation with elders about boarding schools in the taking away of our languages and things like that, which becomes very intense while you're making and doing something, right? I, for instance, always had, because my dad was an iron worker and we traveled everywhere, I always thought everybody else had all this knowledge about the boarding, about that point in our histories, when in reality nobody was really talking about it. But we had these, it made me think of things differently by sitting trying to make moccasins, which, you know, as a professor, I'd give myself a D in moccasin making. I was very bad. We all have different talents. We all have different gifts the creator gives us. Moccasin making is not one of mine. But I had these really wonderful conversations while I was there with elders. So I think sometimes there's different scales. There's the presentation, but then there's also these small moments that you can have over meals and over thinking. So in storytellers, we leave a lot of room for the meal time so that people can meet with their family, meet with people that they might be working on an issue with, and just go around and visiting. So visiting becomes part of the storytelling, right? Mm-hmm. And those moments are important because those are the moments where you really, really learn.
Don't go anywhere. We're taking a short break here on What's Next. You're listening to BTPM NPR. I'm Ryan Zunner.
From the fringes of the mainstream to the local music you love, listen to Buffalo Toronto Public Media at The Bridge Monday through Thursday, 8 p.m. to midnight on BTPM NPR at 88.7 or from your smart speaker.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues facing the communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the BTPM app and we'll work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern we should be addressing? Email us at whatsnext@btpm.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that matter. This is Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Welcome back to this episode of What's Next here on BTPM NPR. I'm your host, Ryan Zenner, and we're continuing our conversation around the UB Indigenous Studies Department's upcoming Storytellers Conference on Friday, April 10th out in Niagara Falls. We're joined by Mishana Goman, chair of UB's Indigenous Studies Department, and Aaron Vinavery, who's the Community Outreach and Cultural Programming Coordinator. Mishana, the theme this year, life, breath, justice for our future. What does that mean?
Well, life breath again is that storytelling, that capability, but life breath really is our languages and holding on to our languages. The theme itself is dedicated to the life work of Montgomery Hill, who was Tuscarora, and it's in celebration of his commemoration of his passing and celebration of his life. This year, as his passing, he was highly devoted to languages and crossed our six nations. He always envisioned kind of a polyglot nation where everybody could speak each other's languages and converse again. And so he really tried to bring that to the UB Indigenous Studies program. He was very into technology, very into thinking through data sovereignty in our languages. So we'll see some of that. So the theme comes about really through wanting to commemorate the work of Montgomery Hill and the important work that he did. He was a language savant that spoke many different languages. I always tease him, he had to catch up with the Seneca. But but he did pretty well with the Mohawk and the Tuscarora. But he was really, really devoted his life to making sure that we had all those languages that we used to speak in the past before the boarding school era took a lot of those languages away from us, where there are people in our community that could speak all the different dialects and all the different language groups themselves as well. And that brought such a strength in our intellectual prowess to do that. And I feel like devoting this is also devoting it to languages is also devoting it to reaching back and reaching forward at the same time, into thinking of an Indigenous futures where our Confederacy comes together through those language practices. And the language workers are doing so much work here, I think, mm-hmm. Inside and outside the university. So we wanted to really honor that.
Yeah. And we talk a lot about, you know, using the terms preservation, right? Language preservation. But, you know, from what it sounds like there, you know, with that work and what you guys are trying to continue on doing, there's also a certain amount of evolution into that, right? You know, keeping up with the younger generation, keeping up with a modern media landscape.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. It's, we're all kind of working towards trying to continue using those languages and reconnecting to some of those languages that have been kind of lost on us. And we're all kind of fighting that same battle, but we're not always connecting. And by sharing the things that are working for our different language programs, it helps other language programs figure out the things that are happening to them. And some people, again, hit those walls and don't know where to go. But being able to see other language programs and how they're able to get beyond some of those issues really helps in creating those different pathways for other language programs to be successful. Mm-hmm. And just by being able to share their successes, sharing their failures, other language programs can be more successful.
It seems very like multi-part. You talked about partnerships, growth, Mishana, how important of a role in what you folks are doing at UB are, Aaron, I think you mentioned the Confederacy chiefs coming in, you know, your area nations here, like the Senecas, the clan mothers. What role do they play in this big partnership?
People come to us, okay. As it interacts, the interaction. We don't try to pull anybody out to do anything they don't want to do. So I think what we love about storytellers, it just becomes a gathering place. So sometimes it's not the official stuff that matters. Again, it's those like dinner conversations or what have you over that, or even like the small scale. Aaron's right about coming together with the language instructors and stuff, but on a smaller scale, much smaller knowledge scale, when I talk to somebody who can unpack like a certain part of a word and how it fits into other words, and I listen to that, I can, like, Jamie Jacobs is just an amazing language person for doing this, right? Like, he'll pull out a word and why it matters, and you get a whole history as well as a placement within a cultural context, right? Mm-hmm. Or as one of the TIPO officer of the SNI, Seneca Nation, said, it's like David Shango, it's like a word can be two-dimensional, but when you have it in our language, it becomes three-dimensional.
And words are almost like phrases.
Yeah. And they're connected to other phrases that present a really cultural importance. And I have no, I can learn a lot of different fields, but languages, I have a very hard time with language. I'm dyslexic. So it becomes very, very hard. And but listening to the language speakers, you can listen to it on that smaller scale too, where you may not understand the whole of Seneca language, but what little I've learned from listening to language speakers, it really presents that kind of 3D dimensional aspect of what we're learning and creates such a deeper understanding of our communities, the place where we're at, even a plant. Like, sometimes we talk about plants in Indigenous studies and there'll be a word for that plant that encompasses all this scientific language. And one of our faculty, Shannon Seneca, is always bringing in community members to talk about medicinal plants for women's health or these kind of things. So I see us bringing in people in a wide array of capacities. It's just basically understanding what I always grew up being told. You have the gifts the Creator gives you and you use those gifts. And I think what we do at UB Indigenous Studies is to pull in all the different people with all these different gifts, right? So that we can create a strong community that way at UB. That's how I see it. Like, we have Chef Lorinda come in. She teaches about food sovereignty. Mm-hmm. We all love it when Chef Lorinda John comes in, because she's an excellent chef. Yeah.
And you know you're going to get something to snack.
You're going to get something good. Yeah. But you're also going to get a history of that food, right? and how it works together, et cetera. Because she also does a lot of research and she does a lot of cultural placements very carefully. So these are the kind of, she has a real gift for that food sources. That's wonderful. So we have all these kind of people coming in.
Right. Yeah, it's something you don't, I mean, you know, from a layperson on the outside, having never, you know, been part of an Indigenous studies program, very different from your maybe stereotypical lecture hall kind of thought that you get when you think about a university.
Yeah. And just kind of going back onto that language kind of vibe, a past presenter did the creation story, and we had all language speakers from across the Confederacy. So yeah, he did the creation story in all six languages. So that was an amazing presentation to kind of to hear, just to have the creation story be told in the language and not fully understanding all the words that they're saying it just puts a kind of a drive into you that, like, I want to learn those languages and I want to be, it's amazing to be able to hear that in the language and knowing the story, knowing the creation story and how many times that I've told it and just kind of listen along to the story in the language is, it's something else that you don't get at any other conference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's, I think, really what makes the Storytellers Conference so special.
Yeah. That was Sam Hill and Friends, yeah. Right? That's our nickname, like Johnny Cash and Friends, Sam Hill and Friends.
What's a thing that you wish more people understood about Indigenous knowledge systems?
That it's in everything.
Mm-hmm.
That it's just absolutely everywhere. There's so much knowledge in our oral traditions, in our cultural practices. They're just so much that connects us with absolutely everything that we're doing. And it's so important to be able to share those knowledge histories and cultures to other areas academically, just because it enriches a lot of the things that they're doing, and it also kind of helps with a lot of the research that they're doing, because we've had this long history of doing Indigenous science, Indigenous mathematics. So there's been people doing this research, and people think it's a lot of times that what they're doing is brand new when it's not. And all these Indigenous people have been doing it for thousands of years. And I'm still amazed by all the different little interconnected things that happen, just like in language, again, kind of connecting one word to multiple different stories and different understandings. And it's just amazing the amount of interconnected things. Just like I did a presentation just recently on just Haudenosaunee culture, and I was connecting it to wampum belts and our stories, and just getting a little bit, just bare minimum at the surface kind of things, and I ran over time by like an hour. And
you probably could have went 2 hours over.
Yeah.
I would say at this point in time, one thing I want to convey, just because we're in a certain cultural moment where I feel like there's a dismissing of certain knowledges that are gained intergenerationally through time, through history. When you think about it, I think about the authors that I work with and other elders that I've worked with and across the United States and California, et cetera, that we've survived an apocalypse already. We made it past that, and we have the tools and the methods in which to do that. I think of the seed warriors or the seed sovereignty warriors or people working on climate change that are in our communities or thinking about those kind of futures, health of land. A lot of times, you know, I think our knowledge systems are learned in their intergenerational, and it's not a mystical kind of Indians are to land kind of thing that was thought of in the past. But what Indigenous Studies is really doing is showing how that takes commitment, and that takes that inner building up of that intergenerational knowledge that occurs in those moments, that becomes absolutely relevant. And then if you want us to look at the ways that metrics work in the university system, and I am the chair, so I'll lean a little bit into that, is that what you see is, it's not a coincidence that 80% of the biodiversity of this planet is located on Indigenous land. And I'm talking worldwide, right? Mm-hmm. And that the stewardship of that land has been conducted through Indigenous commitment to that, Indigenous commitments to knowledge systems that we're talking about here. So when I think of that, we can just think in the United States too. And then if you want to go to the more what universities are looking at, as such as career, Indigenous nations actually are in some states are the biggest employers of people. And so therefore, I think Seneca Nation, which is the fifth largest employer in this area, right? People should know what sovereignty means and how it came about as a concept in the 1960s. They should know what inherent sovereignty or how the Confederacy came together. These are things that they should know if they're employed in one of these employers with the Seneca Nation, but also to have interactions. Like there's a lot of interactions. Native people are not isolated off into a corner somewhere, but we are actually very prominent centers of knowledge keeping, of basic day-to-day life, employment, etc. But I don't know, I see some of the comments on Grand Island and I'm like, oh man, these people need a history lesson, and they need to understand the various factors that go into how Grand Island came to be, but also why the Seneca Nation is now in a great position that it is in. And there clearly is a lack of understanding, and I think that's what Indigenous knowledge has to offer. How can we live on this planet together and move forward together, right? In a good way and with a good mind. And I think that's what that we have to offer. But I do see the wider community. I wish knew at least a sliver of Aaron's Haudenosaunee 101 class, because they would have a better understanding of where they're at, the land they're on, and that kind of historical relation, and also how to move forward together.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to our conversation here on What's Next on the UB Indigenous Studies Department's Storytellers Conference, upcoming on April 10th in Niagara Falls. Mishana Goman, chair of the UB's Indigenous Studies Department, joining us. Aaron Vinavery, community outreach and cultural programming coordinator with the department. I want to get like a little personal here. We talk a lot about intergenerational storytelling knowledge. Who are some of the storytellers that made an impact on your lives, especially, you know, when you were younger?
One of the presenters at the Storytellers Conference was Bob Antone, also a PhD student at UB. I first heard him talk, and he was kind of being able to kind of hear him talk and then present with him, and then him giving me feedback and boosting my confidence in my academic career, and really kind of helped me see that I was on the right path. I looked up to, I took a few classes with him as well. Mm-hmm. So I had that relationship with him to be able to kind of bounce off some ideas from him, but then be able to see that he's reading my work and taking that in and then saying that helping push me forward in my academic understanding of the topics that I was working on. And he was a big influence, but also a number of other academics. Teresa McCarthy, she's been a huge mentor for me, just being able to really give me the confidence to use language and use oral traditions in a lot of the research that I do, and telling me that it's important to have that, because a number of professors have told me that like oral traditions are not research, and they're not useful in anything that you do. And I had people saying that like some of that stuff is not helpful in your research, and you should be looking for more other resources to go with. And then I've taken a class with Orrin Lyons. He really kind of helped me find my voice. I'm not the biggest talker in the world, but just hearing him talk about how the Confederacy has these kind of protocols to bring all of our people together, and to kind of it took a long time to have a meeting, and it wasn't over a couple of hours. It was usually done over a few weeks. You get everybody gathered there, you kind of take time to rest, to feed everybody, to kind of clear people's minds, clear people's throats so they can talk better and have a better understanding of the issue at hand. And just hearing him talk about the kind of protocols of making sure everybody has a voice and being able to share even those voices that are a little bit quieter, a little bit more reserved, like mine, and just knowing that it was important to kind of have those people that took their time to think about things.
Mm-hmm.
I think I kind of had a lot of teachers that were like, I need this information now.
Mm-hmm.
And I always felt like I still have to think about that a little bit.
Yeah.
Those
folks gave you that breath to think and to speak and, yeah, and whatnot. It's important. Just a few minutes left here, Mashana. What are the storytellers that made an impact on you?
Oh, I come from a family of storytellers in some senses. So I have a lot of characters in my family, as my community much knows. So, you know, I was gone for years. I moved back here back and forth. My dad was an iron worker, like I said. So we stayed here off and on when I was a child. But for a majority, boarding schools kind of did a big number on my family. So I went with the older siblings, and some of the younger siblings went back to Tonawanda. But in my Uncle Stonehorse Goman, actually, is probably one of my biggest storytellers. He really encouraged me as a young child. I think he was very sad I didn't go on to be a lawyer when I got into one of the top grad programs, the PhD program. He's like, surely some law school would have had you. And so I think for me, that encouragement of looking at education was very, very helpful to me as a child. But I grew up in a very much social justice. My family were all involved with the American Indian Movement. I grew up in Northern Maine, primarily with that side of my family. So there'd be people coming back and forth down from, because Route 2, we lived off Route 2, which was a big for the Wabanaki Confederacy of Maliseet, Mi'kmaq, and all of those come down. So I learned very early on through traveling every 3 to 6 months with my father, moving every 3 to 6 months, and being in large iron worker families, which was not isolated from Haudenosaunee people, trust me, but more traveling with those very, a lot of people where everybody was a storyteller, that speaking up on social justice issues is very important. And so for me, I think I learned at a very young age the importance of that. And perhaps, which is probably the opposite of Erin, I had to learn to talk a lot to get heard. And I was the oldest cousin of 20 kids. And as the oldest girl cousin, you're expected a certain kind of caretaking and bossing around. So I was seen to become the next lawyer in the family. But yeah, I went on to do working in higher ed and being in the classroom, because that mattered to me. My generation really is the first to see Indigenous professors, a large array of Indigenous professors. and mentoring and making sure people have a support system became very important to me. And doing things like storytellers became very, very important to me to try to bring community in all these voices come together, not in the various hierarchies that we saw in previous generations where it was extracting Indigenous knowledge, mm-hmm. but really how do we support Indigenous communities that hold the knowledges that are needed in order to address things like environmentalism, language, all of these sort of facets that we need to address. So I guess early on, yeah, I would have to say I grew up around people always talking and storytelling and various degrees of what you can say on air and not.
Yeah. Well, Nyawe, thank you both so much for this. And if you want to hear or see Indigenous knowledge on full display, the Indigenous Studies Department will be hosting that Storytellers Conference Friday, April 10th at the Niagara Falls Convention Center from 8:30 a.m. to 8 p.m. More information on the UB Indigenous Studies Program's Facebook page. Would you say that would be kind of one of the better spots to find it?
Yeah.
Or you can look up UB Indigenous Studies and it will be on there.
And there'll be links on there. Yeah. Great. Yeah. Awesome. Nyawe, thank you so much for listening. That was Mashana Goman, Chair of the UB Indigenous Studies Department, Aaron Vinavery, Community Outreach and Cultural Programming Coordinator for the Indigenous Studies Department. I'm Ryan Zunner, your host for this episode of What's Next here on BTPM NPR. Thank you for listening.
Support for the BTPM NPR What's Next podcast comes from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, partnering with the community to pursue racial and socioeconomic health equity. Learn more at hfwcny.org.